remain steadfast upon faith, if we trust in Allah, if we rely in Allah, and we try our hardest, then no matter the odds and no matter how great the enemy and the opposition might seem, the party of Allah will surely be victorious. A beautiful, beautiful lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. Welcome to this segment of To My Brother. My name is Muhammad. After returning from the Battle of Siffin, Imam Ali gave certain pieces of advice to one of his sons. Historians consider him to be Imam Hassan alayhi salam, while others are of the opinion that he was Muhammadul Hanafi. He wrote this letter in the form of a will. They deal with almost every aspect of life, which goes a long way to make a man successful in life, brave, humane, generous, virtuous, and pious. Today, I'm going to read to you an excerpt from the last will of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. My dear son, I convey all this to you, lest inordinate desires, temptations, and inducement should start influencing you, or adverse changes of times and circumstances should drag your name in the mire, or I should leave you like an untrained colt, because a young and fresh mind is like a virgin soil which allows things sown in it to grow verdantly and to bear luxuriantly. Then, I have made use of early opportunities to educate you and train you before your mind loses its freshness, before it gets hardened or warped, before you start facing life unprepared for the encounter, and before you are forced to use your decisions and discretions without gaining advantages of accumulated traditions, collected knowledge, and experiences of others. These words of advice and counsels that I give you will save you from the worry of acquiring knowledge, gathering experiences, and soliciting advice from others. Now, you can easily make use of all the knowledge which men have to acquire with great care, trouble, and patience. Things which were hidden from them, and which only experiments, experiences, and sufferings could bring to light, are now made easily available to you through these exhortations. My dear son, though the span of my life is not as that of some other people who have passed away before me, yet I took great care to study their lives. Assiduously, I went through their activities. I contemplated over their deliberations and deeds. I studied their remains, relics, and ruins. I pondered over their lives so deeply that I felt as if I have lived and worked with them from early ages of history down to our times, and I know what did them good and what brought them harm.
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. And I'd like to begin with this first question about Amir al-Mu'mineen. And the question about who is Ali is actually a very simple question. What I want to answer tonight is the question of what is Ali. There is a difference between who is Ali and what is Ali. And for this, I would like to go to a story narrated by Hakim Nishapuri. He actually talks about a hadith which has been quoted by many, many Sunni scholars, but only the last part, what the Prophet said Ali. But the preamble of that is only narrated by this fellow known as Hakim Nishapuri. Hakim Nishapuri was a scholar who came later on, and he was expert of Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim. And he realized, you know, he studied the methodology of both of these scholars, Imam Bukhari and Imam Muslim. And he says that, I see there are many, many ahadiths that these two scholars have ignored. Although when I look at the methodology, it was necessary for them to include those ahadiths. So he wrote something known as Al-Mustadrak al-Sahihain. As a complement to Sahihain. Sahihain means Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim, the ahadith which have been missing from those two books. And there he has a narration, and this is a narration which is considered by him to be Sahih, according to the standards of Imam Bukhari and Imam Muslim, and as well as other scholars of hadith who have come later on. They verify that this is a Sahih hadith. And what is the hadith? He says that the slave of Abu Zar Ghifari, by the name of Abu Thabit, he narrates that he was with Ali bin Abi Talib on the day of Jamal in Basra. He says, when we gathered in the battlefield, both, you know, sides facing one another, he said, when I looked at the other side, I saw Aisha, Ummul Mu'mineen. And when I looked at her, confusion and doubt crept into my heart, the way it had happened to many people. You know, for us, it's very easy, coming centuries after the event, to study them, what happened before, what happened after, what happened within. So we know the context. And it's easy for us to make the judgment. But put yourself in the place of Abu Thabit. On one hand, he says it is the Prophet's son-in-law. On the other side, he sees the Prophet's wife. On the other side, he saw the cousin of the Prophet, Abdullah ibn Abbas. On the other side, he saw another cousin of the Prophet, Zubayr. And so there was a lot of confusion. He was, you know, people were not that clear when they saw these personalities on both sides. But Abu Thabit says that by the time of Zuhr, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala resolved the doubt for me. And I was there steadfast on the side of Ali bin Abi Talib alayhi salatu wasalam.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
SpaceX's first all-private crew have successfully concluded the first orbital mission in history with no professional astronauts on board. The four tourists on board, the SpaceX Dragon capsule landed in the Atlantic Ocean off the coast of Florida after spending 3 days in space. The capsule was then transported by helicopter to the Kennedy Space Center, where on Wednesday they took off aboard. During the flight, the crew members' vital signs were monitored to study the effects of the environment of space on complete novices. The Inspiration4 mission was an effort aimed at encouraging the democratization of space. It sought to prove that the cosmos are accessible to crew that have not been handpicked nor been in training for years. Iceland is not unfamiliar with volcanoes, but one that has gone on for more than 6 months is surprising even for the volcanic Scandinavian nation. Hot lava has been spewing out of craters near Iceland's capital Reykjavik since March 19th. Scientists say there is no sign that the eruptions will end anytime soon. Almost 143 million cubic meters of lava has been discharged so far, creating spectacular scenes. More than 300,000 people have visited the site of the eruptions. The field has been named the Beautiful Valley of Lava.
Visitors and keepers of a zoo in the Peruvian capital, Lima, are thrilled over the birth of 8 baby penguins from the vulnerable Humboldt species. Zookeepers say the chicks were hatched in July and they're expecting 6 more additions later in October. Currently, the newborns spend their days resting in their nests and being fed by their parents. The Huachipa Zoo currently has 42 Humboldt penguins and is working on recovering the species population.
We have 8 2-month-old chicks and 6 eggs. In 42 days, those eggs will hatch and the chicks will come out. The important thing about Humboldt penguins is that we are recovering their population because they are in a vulnerable state. We are increasing their populations with the breeding we are doing in the zoo.
Researchers say a maximum of less than 10,000 Humboldt penguins are left in the wild, with their population size undergoing extreme fluctuations. The species face emerging threats from agricultural activities to their own vulnerability to predators. The Humboldt penguins are only found along the Pacific coast of Chile and Peru and are enlisted as threatened species by the International Union for Conservation of Nature.
A passionate Indian teacher has turned a road into a classroom and houses walls into blackboards to make up for the prolonged school shutdown caused by COVID-19. Deep Narayan Nayak is working with nearly 60 students in a small tribal village in the eastern state of West Bengal. He started to teach students, most of whom are first-generation learners, last year, when all local schools closed under lockdown restrictions. Nayak says that he was worried about his students' education since many of them did not have access to smartphones or internet connection. But thanks to his initiative, his students can learn everything from popular nursery rhymes to the importance of masks.
We are teaching children everything: how to maintain social distancing, how to wear a mask, what is the importance of masks and hand washing. The children came forward and participated in this initiative, and they are also educating others.
The parents and villagers are grateful to Nayak, saying that they are happy their children are no longer wasting their time loitering around in the village. Nayak is now popularly known as the teacher of the street among the villagers. Water scarcity is a significant and accelerating problem for people worldwide. A UK-based charity, WaterAid, has installed life-size ice sculptures in London to show the fragility of water and the threat posed by climate change.
Climate change is water change, so it means that droughts will get longer, which means that previous reliable sources of the water just won't be there. It means that flooding, sometimes in the same country, becomes very severe, polluting water sources and destroying infrastructure. But it also means unpredictability. Water sources that people have relied on for generations, farming as well as for their health and hygiene, are just no longer there.
Farr, a policy analyst for WaterAid, said people with no access to clean water are bearing the brunt of climate change. The sculptures opposite Tower Bridge are part of the charity's fight, which calls on the British government to increase funding for climate adaptation. The sculptures show how clean water is essential for human survival, with some being depicted carrying buckets and pots in search of water. The environmental group wanted to highlight the threat climate change poses to our planet.
Egyptian archaeologists have completed the renovation of a tomb of an ancient king, providing a rare glimpse into the world's oldest known pyramid. The 4,700-year-old Step Pyramid was built during the reign of King Djoser. The southern tomb is the second for the king, and is smaller compared to royal tombs. Some researchers suggest it was built for the preservation of Djoser's internal organs, while others say it was built symbolically. It had been undergoing renovation for 15 years before being reopened to the public.
120 tons of blocks were raised by Egyptian hands, astonishingly, and with the determination to achieve one goal. That is the reconstruction of the tomb, just as it was 4,700 years ago.
The complex is historically significant, as it is the earliest known example of the Egyptian custom of pharaohs being buried in pyramid-shaped tombs. According to experts, ancient Egyptians believed that this step design served as a gigantic stairway of the soul of a deceased pharaoh that could ascend to the heavens. Now, we've all grown up playing with a pinball machine at least once in our lifetime. Now, a free runner has designed a giant scaled-up pinball machine, turning it into his personal playground. Latvian free runner Paša Petkuns came up with the idea of playing on real-life pinball machines during a road trip. The set, made in London, is not for the faint-hearted, as it is slanted at a 45-degree angle. Paša thought his breakdancing experience might help, but in the end, he had to invent a whole new style of movement. The producer of the film, showing the performance on the machine, described the set as very scary.
It's 17 meters high, it's 16 meters wide, and 20 meters long. It's an angle of 45 degrees, and I don't know if you understand how much 45 degrees is. It's like, it's a double black diamond slope. It's something you don't go down, you can't, because it's more like falling than anything else.
It does sound scary. Now, the impressive set, designed to look like a retro pinball machine you might find in arcades, took 7 weeks to construct. Global landmarks like the Eiffel Tower and the Statue of Liberty are featured in it. Petkuns works as a Hollywood stunt double.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Plastic pollution has become one of the most pressing environmental issues, as disposable products overwhelm the world's ability to deal with them. But a young Spanish designer is dedicating his time to the cause of recycling plastic waste. 28-year-old Humberto Les quit his job last year to focus full-time on his environmental efforts. He collects trash from the coast of his home island of Gran Canaria. Humberto usually picks up an average of 5 kilos from the shore at a time. After he is done compiling, he processes the material and turns it into pieces of furniture. Humberto's aim is to make the task of recycling plastic economically justifiable, that is.
I decided to leave my job, stability, to come back here to develop a project to clean the coastline by designing furniture, because I realized that the coast could not be cleaned in an altruistic manner. So I found a way to give economic value to the waste found in the coast.
Umberto is making products ranging from clothes hangers to stools, but he also wants to create larger products with a longer lifespan in the future. According to the UN Environment Program, only 9% of all plastic waste produced throughout history has ever been reprocessed. Around 80% of it remains accumulated in dumps, landfills, or nature.
The floating concert venue has entertained music lovers in London. Renowned pianist Masayuki Tayama and his partner started a project to play on a canal boat traversing the city's waterways 2 months ago. Since then, they have performed 9 concerts, and their upcoming performances are already sold out in months ahead. The couple came up with the idea after living on a narrow boat with a digital piano.
This is the piano boat, which is the only canal boat of its kind. It was built to our specifications as a floating concert venue. So we have a brand new Steinway grand piano, and here we give musical experiences for people on the canals.
The artists believe the experience is very different from playing in regular concert halls. They say recitals on the boat create a unique interaction with the audience and it feels friendlier. Small fairy pigeon Vader has interrupted a cricket match in Ireland. A playful puppy ran into the field of a semi-final match and caught the ball. The scene caused laughter amongst those present. After a few minutes of chasing the dog, players managed to get the ball back. The funny video has gone viral on the internet.
A caiman and a local tour guide in Bolivia's Amazon region have formed an unlikely friendship with Bond going viral on the internet. Although people are warned to stay away from caimans, Alejandro Gil has struck up a friendship with one special reptile named Jesus. Despite the caiman's carnivorous nature, it shakes his tail and allows Gil to pat it on the head after being fed. At 4 meters long, Gil, however, admits that getting close to Jesus does still make him nervous.
My knees shake when I work with Jesus. I'm always scared and very careful, and also respectful to tourists. Guides in the Pampa de Yacuma and across Bolivia consult with tourists before undertaking an activity. If they agree with it, then we do it. If one person is not in agreement with an activity, then we don't do it.
Gil says they are only able to get in touch with a caiman in a dry season when the river is at low water levels. They lose the reptile in January when the river rises. Caimans inhabit Mexico, Central and Northern South America, from marshes and swamps to mangrove rivers and lakes. Their diet consists of a great deal of fish, but caimans also hunt insects, birds and small mammals and reptiles. A new initiative has been launched to turn the spotlight on the misery of Syrian refugee children. Little Amal, a giant puppet depicting a young Syrian refugee child, has arrived in St. Peter's Square in Vatican City. This 3.5 meter tall puppet has traveled all the way from Syria to Turkey, Greece, and Italy. It will then go to France, Switzerland, Germany, Belgium, and the UK to focus attention and the urgent needs of young refugees.
Syrian refugees, especially children, are in a dire situation after being driven from their homes due to the conflict in their country. Archaeologists have discovered the largest ever bronze mask in an archaeological site in China's southwest Sichuan province.
This is a large bronze mask we unearthed from the central park of the number 3 ritual pit. The widest part, from one tip of ear to the other, is 136 centimeters, and the height is around 75 centimeters. It can be regarded as the largest bronze mask unearthed in Sanjingdui, and even the largest in the Shang and the Shu dynasties.
The mask was found together with other cultural objects such as ivory and bronzeware. These items needed to be removed first before handling the mask, which made the extraction process complicated. Restoration work is underway on the largest bronze mask taken from the site. The relic is believed to be thousands of years old, dating back to the Shu period. The site is an archaeological treasure mine belonging to the Bronze Age of over 4,000 years ago. The area was first discovered in China in the late 1920s.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed, smiling he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. This program, Islamic Laws, we are going to deal with the laws related to taqlid or following mujtahid according to Ayatollah Sistani. Before that, let's take a listen to a short biography.
The grand Ayatollah Sistani comes from the family of scholars and pious men. He learned theological and rational sciences from many eminent and well-known religious scholars. At the age of 5, His Eminence started learning the Holy Quran. He was then admitted in a religious center for reading, writing, and for learning basic mathematics and geography. In the beginning of 1360 Hijri, he started studying basic Hausa lessons. He also studied a number of books on philosophy, like Sharh Manzumah Sabzawari and Sharh Ashraq. Meanwhile, he attended Kharij lectures by the late Mirza Mehdi Ashtiani and the late Mirza Hashim Qazwini. In the late 1368 Hijri, he migrated to Qum to accomplish his studies in Fiqh and Usul. His Eminence left Qum for Najaf al-Ashraf. On having arrived in Najaf, he began attending Qayatullah Khoi and Sheikh Hussain Hilli's lectures in jurisprudence and the fundamentals of jurisprudence. In 1380 Hijri, Ayatollah Sistani traveled back to his hometown, the holy city of Mashhad, expecting to stay and settle down there. In the same year, he was awarded a permit by Imam Al-Khoi and another by Sheikh Hilli, certifying that he had attained the level of ijtihad, that is, deduction of legal judgment in matters of religion.
Well, Sheikh Tawheed, since we are talking about the laws related to taqlid or following a religious authority, let me start this episode with this question. You know, we all know that there are two kinds of people who are ignorant about Islamic laws or don't pay enough attention to the Islamic laws, all right?
Yeah.
Either they are innocent in their ignorance or they are really guilty.
Guilty.
All right? So could you shed some light or even give some examples about this so that our dear audience would know and understand the meaning of ignorance in the context of legal and Islamic laws or rules?
Thank you very much for the nice question. Well, as you rightly mentioned, there are two kinds of ignorant people when it comes to Islamic laws and mm-hmm. Legal rulings. The proper term to use is culpable ignorance mm-hmm. and inculpable ignorance, okay?
Right.
A person who is guilty mm-hmm. in his ignorance, he has, for example... Yeah, he has access to religious yes. authorities, he has access to the internet, to books, and to Islamic material, and yet still he does not take any action to learn the Islamic law,
right.
and he continues to perform his prayers without even doing any research whether his prayers are valid or not, and he does actions which may be haram and which
right.
may be halal, but anyhow, he is guilty and he does not make any efforts to improve his knowledge and his awareness about religious activities mm-hmm. or religious actions. So such a person is actually guilty, and we can say that his ignorance is culpable.
Right.
But when it comes to inculpable ignorance, that is a kind of ignorance out of innocence, okay? Innocence. So people want to know about Islam, they want to know about fiqh, about the Holy Quran, about tradition, but they have no means with which or through which they can actually learn or they can improve their awareness mm-hmm. or their knowledge of Islam. So just imagine there are people in the North Pole. These people are, let's say, Eskimos, okay?
Yes.
These are people who have no access to anything, and they do not have any idea about what Islam is or what religion is. Okay, they are cut off from the rest of the world, okay?
So there is no cyberspace, no electricity,
yeah.
no nothing.
Maybe recently such things might be available.
Penetrated those
yeah.
places. Yes.
But even they do not have the knowledge, the know-how, the skill, because it needs some kind of knowledge.
Yes.
How to use such things. So these people are ignorant, and these ignorant people are inculpable. They cannot be punished even in the hereafter.
Yes.
According to Ayatollah Sistani, such people even do not deserve to be punished in the hereafter. Now, when it comes to giving you an example,
right.
I give you the example of someone, let's say, who masturbates in the month of Ramadan,
mm-hmm.
thinking that it's not haram, and he continues doing this. He does not perform ghusl. Now, if a person deliberately and knowingly does this, masturbates, he has to give the qadha of his fast.
In kafara.
Yeah, and also he has to give the kafara.
Yes.
Because he has done it deliberately
yes.
and intentionally. But if a person has been under the impression that masturbation is not haram, it is not forbidden.
Yes.
And he does it out of pure ignorance.
Yes.
And he's not guilty in his ignorance. Actually, such a person does not have to repeat his fast. His fast is valid. And the same person is not supposed to give any kafar.
Even his fast is valid?
His fast is valid, yes, of course.
Interesting.
According to Ayatollah Sistani. And that's what we are trying to explain here in this episode. Yes.
I see.
Ayatollah Sistani says that he is not supposed to give the qadha of his fast. His fast is valid in this supposition.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Nor does he give the kafara then.
Kafara is not obligatory either. Yes.
Okay. Let's take a break, if you agree, and we'll be back after a short break.
Sure.
The Office of Ayatollah Sistani is currently providing the following services. 1. Board of Istifta, replying to religious questions. 2. Helping the poor, needy, homeless, and those who have suffered losses by earthquakes and floods. 3. Sending books for people who want to understand and learn Islam. 4. Hajj delegation. 5. Sending preachers. Board of Istifta is a link between Ayatollah Sistani and people. It provides them with answers to questions pertaining to religious, ideological, social, and educational matters in accordance with the verdicts and rulings of Ayatollah Sistani. For more information, visit the website of Ayatollah Sistani at www.sistani.org. You can also ask your questions through the following email, english@sistani.org.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Sheikh Javid, we are talking about the laws related to taqlid according to Ayatollah Sistani. Let me ask you this question. You know, we know that when children, in fact, become, or come of age and they attain puberty, in lots of other areas of life, they follow their elders, their parents. Is it necessary for these children who have attained puberty to follow a mujtahid whom their father follows?
Well, it's also an issue which needs to be discussed at length, at least. Children who attain puberty are not able to identify the most knowledgeable and the most qualified mujtahid. And even ordinary people who are adults, who are even educated, who have gone to universities and schools and have acquired knowledge of Islamic teachings, are not in a position to identify the most knowledgeable and the most qualified, or let's say the most eligible mujtahid, let alone children who have just attained puberty. So these people, of course, can receive or can get some advice from their parents, but they are not actually supposed to follow the same mujtahid whom their parents follow. Okay, and of course they can conduct their own research. They can do research about the mujtahid whom they follow. And of course, it's a difficult task. It's an uphill task. But if children come to know that a given mujtahid is more popular, more famous, and he is well known across the world, okay, that can be a reason to suggest that he could be the most knowledgeable person, otherwise he would not have been so famous across the world. So actually a reputation reputation is, according to Ayatollah Sistani, a reason with which one can convince himself or come to the conclusion through which that mujtahid is the most popular and the most eligible learned scholar. Otherwise, how could such a mujtahid gain so much reputation
Sheikh Javid, quite following the previous question that I asked you, how can a teenager, let's say a 15-year-old boy, identify or get to know the most learned mujtahid or religious authority? Don't you think that it's kind of difficult trying to find the most qualified mujtahid totally on his own?
Well, it has always been, and it still is, and it still is an uphill task, as I said, for everyone, let alone children, let alone or teens who have just attained puberty, to identify the most learned and the most eligible scholar. But, you know, the religious authorities have put forth certain procedures and certain methods through which one can identify the most learned mujtahid.
Yes.
For instance, if two qualified scholars bear witness or testify to the effect that a certain mujtahid is actually the most learned mujtahid, that is sufficient, provided that those two scholars are not contradicted by other two scholars or three or more other scholars.
You
okay,
they come to a kind of unanimous agreement.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. If two people who are qualified, not ordinary people in this street, okay, two faqih, two jurists, bear witness that a certain mujtahid is the most qualified mujtahid, then that's sufficient. He can just act according to the testimony given by those two scholars.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. That was the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Fiqh or Jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked an...
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of...
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. Please accept our condolences on the martyrdom anniversary of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam, Mir Bagheri, about the Master of the Martyrs, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. There are many fruitful outcomes for paying ziyarah to the tomb of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Of course, the path of paying ziyarah to Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam might not be an easy one, and even sometimes it may be a dangerous one. However, if someone is really interested in taking steps on this path, he or she must bear its difficulties too. Even it is recommended not to leave this path, even if it is full of dangers, because some special rewards are considered for visiting the tomb of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. There are also some special rewards if you go on feet to visit the tomb of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. This point is mentioned in many authentic narrations of the Shia infallible imams. There are both worldly and otherworldly rewards for visiting the tomb of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. This is as if all the heaven and earth are serving the pilgrims of the tombs of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, and in fact pave the way for the visitors in Karbala. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Mir Bagheri. To find out more about this program, please log on to our website, parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care, and goodbye.
questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing, where we discuss problems, issues, and other relevant questions parents have when raising their children in an Islamic way. The answers are, as usual, all based upon the Holy Quran and the narrations of the Prophet and of the household of the Prophet, peace be upon them all. Joining us is our guest speaker, Sayyid Abdullah al-Musawi, who is an Islamic researcher at the Seminary of Qum. Dear Sayyid, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sayyid. Today's topic is about disciplining our children. How should we go about disciplining them in a productive and perhaps a humane and effective way?
A'udhu billahi minash shaitan rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadan wa ali Muhammad wa anjil farajah. Before we talk about disciplining children, discipline itself, as a term, we use it to bring attention of the child to something that he done wrong, or right, to a behavior that we don't like. And sometimes it serves as a painful reminder for what he did. Now, there are ways, and there are principles, and there are, you know, as we say, fundamentals to the laws and rules of trying to punish a child. One thing for sure, that when it comes to punishment, most people, the thing that comes to their mind when it comes to punishing the children, the first thing that they would do is resort to hitting the child. Right. That's the first thing that people do when it comes to disciplining their children. The child does something wrong, the parents get angry, and the first thing he would do is he'd hit his child.
It's a knee-jerk reaction. The first thing
is an immediate reaction, which indicates, to some extent, some might be take offense to what I'm about to say, but to some extent, is an act of ignorance. When a person hits his child, it's an act of ignorance.
Right.
Because a child, if you think that will have an effect, then you're mistaken. That would actually have a reaction, an opposite reaction, and the effect will be short term.
So it's backfires.
He would stop for now, but guess what? Next time is going to be double, triple. That's how the human body works. That's how the human mind works. So a lot of people don't understand that what they do is actually make the children worse. So when it comes to discipline, a person has to keep in mind that the more he disciplines his child, the worse he makes him, not the better that he makes him.
Is this a rule of thumb, or is it just...
It is a rule of thumb.
Okay.
Yeah, the more you punish a child, the worse he becomes. Because human being, their nature, we're rebellious in our nature.
Right.
Yeah, we always start to rebel from Allah and downwards.
Right.
So we have this nature that we, I think we many times we mentioned that the child, especially a child, is in the process of building his own personality, creating his own identity. When this identity is in the process of the making and it gets hurt, it gets insulted, then he would replace the bricks of his personality with what is meant to be with something that shouldn't be.
Right.
For example, if he was growing to be a nice, soft child, now he's being hit, now he's being assaulted, he has rage now, he has anger, he has hate. He would use that.
So these negative feelings he will use to build himself up.
Yeah, so he would use the wrong materials to build the wrong person. By the time he becomes in his teenage years, he would have a troubled child. And then you say, well, what did I do wrong? Well, nothing. He just slapped him many times. So you haven't done much.
Really nothing.
Yeah, so that kind of way and that kind of questioning always brings a negative effect to the child.
And on that note, dear listeners, we will take a quick break.
When I was born, the first words that I had heard were the words of Allah being whispered through my ear. And as I felt Allah's presence in my soul, that day Islam took me in its fold.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are discussing how to correctly discipline our children in an effective manner. Dear Sayyid, please continue the discussion.
So we said that disciplining a child, obviously, if the first thing that comes to your mind is hitting a child and trying to hurt your child, then as a reaction or out of anger, then obviously not only going on the wrong way about doing it, but you're actually doing more damage to the child than doing any good.
Right.
Second thing that we need to keep in mind when it comes to also trying to punish our children or discipline our children is that let's educate the child themselves before. I think we made that point clearer in episodes to come, that we need to educate the child before we punish them. There are, you know, many ways we can educate. And even if we want to, let's say, discipline our child, there are over 50 different ways of disciplining a child.
So that does not require, only hitting.
Yeah, so that does not require us, you know, hitting or taking extreme measures. There are many, many ways that we can use in order to make the child correct his mistake and correct his behavior, especially just by becoming his friend. Just giving him that friendly feeling. That sometimes when you do something wrong and your friend comes and tells you, look, this is wrong, usually we listen to our friends. Because we have this special bond between them and between us and them, so we try to solve. But if your friend just comes and just yells at you, tells you off, obviously you're going to not, you know, we will take offense to it.
You're going
to
be receptive at least to the feedback, at the very, very least.
Exactly. So someone comes to them and our children, we have to keep these things in mind. And the younger they are, obviously, the worse it becomes. So, first thing happens when we discipline a child, because we try to understand how discipline works first and foremost before we go on to the methods of discipline.
Right.
Is that when a child is disciplined, the first thing that happens to him, it kills his IQ when it comes to his intellect, when it comes to his ability to think and become creative. That will become a lot worse. How so? So if you run out of patience and you don't have patience, and the first thing that you do, you slap your child once a day, twice a day, or at least twice a week, three times a week. So when the child faces this state of pain inside him, he will be constantly thinking of other things to calm himself down. So he tries to find out why he's feeling so miserable in trying to be with his parent. Right. So his mind and his entire brain, his mentality will shift to somewhere else. For example, we've seen this many times when you have kids at school who are traumatized in their houses, they can't concentrate in class. They can't create, they cannot think because his mind is constantly busy. For example, if a child gets beaten a few times a week, most of the times he will think, when will I be beaten again?
Right.
So he is living in a fear.
He will be preoccupied with that.
Yeah, so his thinking, his intellect will obviously fly away.
Yeah, that makes sense. And on that note, dear Sayyid, we will take a quick